Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. As it's Wednesday, we're talking theatre. And joining me in the studio today to tell me what's on stage is the theatre critic for The Times, Dominic Maxwell. We'll be discussing a revival of the Pinter classic, The Caretaker. We'll head to East London for a new production by a young theatre group called 1972, The Future of Sex. And we'll take a quick trip to Pluto via the Royal Court in a space station drama called X. That's all ahead on today's Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Kicking off today's show, we are at the Old Vic for a production of Harold Pinter's play, The Caretaker, which premiered back in 1960. Dominic Maxwell, welcome to the show. Let's start with the storyline of the play, perhaps for those who aren't so familiar.
It's basically an old tramp or an old guy, played by Timothy Spall, is invited back to the sort of drab attic home of this guy called Aston, played by Daniel Mays. And then he's invited to stay. And then he stays a bit longer, and then they sort of talk about the weather and shoes a bit. And then Aston's violent brother, played by George Mackay, he turns up and he's a bit shouty. And then eventually the Timothy Spall character, who's called Davis, goes.
Okay, so clearly there are lots of twists and turns.
Yeah, I don't want to give too many spoilers there. I mean, it's Pinter, so it's the journey, not the destination, really. That's the point here.
But I think the journey here is not exactly a brisk one, is it?
No, that's very true. I mean, I think I last saw this 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when Jonathan Pryce was in the lead role in the West End, and I really liked it. I've always really liked it. I found it a bit of a struggle here. One of the reasons I found it a struggle is that, as you say, it is 3 hours long.
That's an epic.
It shouldn't be 3 hours long.
Anything that's set just inside someone's little apartment or something.
Yeah, I think there should be probably a sort of 90-minute limit on that, shouldn't there? Sort of storyless stories should have a 90-minute limit. And then Timothy Spall, I was really looking forward to seeing him. I'd never seen him on stage. He hasn't done a full-length play for over 20 years. And it's like he's making up for lost time. He is doing so much acting. And each of it individually is great, but very soon you think, oh, back off a little bit, Timothy.
Yes.
Stop it with all the tics and the gestures. You know, they're kind of exquisite, but it's only when he settles down a bit and does a bit less that you go, oh, actually, there's greatness within there, but there's so much ornamentation to get through, I found.
It sort of feels from your description that we've had a few problems here with trying to maybe determine the correct serving size for something like this when it's put on the stage. I mean, it's 3 hours long. As you say, Timothy Spall is perhaps having a little bit too much fun getting up there on stage with a little bit too much acting, throwing a little bit too much into what should be a nice, neat and digestible package.
It's never going to be that neat and digestible, being a sort of storyless, weird, what's going on? Well, I think it's about this. No, I think it's about that.
Which can be a wonderful thing.
Oh, it can be a wonderful thing. And I think the thing is, it's a lot on the surface. The joy in Pinter is in those... It is exactly in the what's going on here. Who's in charge here? Is in the power play. That's the whole thing of it. And somehow here, I mean, I wouldn't say it's completely absent, but it lacks nuance, it lacks resonance. And George Mackay, who's a great actor in Pride, good actor on stage as well, he's just sort of... He looks like a really impressive A-level student doing some really impressive acting. I don't buy him as this hard man character. And without that, there's not enough tension. There's a speech from Daniel Mays. Terrific actor. Always, always good, Daniel Mays. And he is allowed to play sincerity. He's allowed to play pain. And he has a speech at the end of the second of three acts, which is beautiful. Absolutely lovely.
There is something that can be done with very few people inside what is essentially just one room. I've seen Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf a couple of times, and obviously you say to someone, let's spend 2 hours with a middle-aged married couple inside their house, and you'd think, oh, that sounds like a bit of a snooze. But, of course, you're absolutely on the edge of your seat for that entire time, and you're almost relieved when you get to step outside. There is something that can be done with a few resources like this. It sounds as though it hasn't been done here. Do you feel at all tense, or is there some sort of dramatic feeling you did get despite the fact that it was obviously too long?
Yeah, you know, it's not rubbish. It's got a lot of very good reviews, but it left me... To be honest, I sat there thinking, oh, God, I hate theatre. Theatre is such hard work sometimes.
Not something that you want. And you know,
all my friends who hate theatre, this is I think I mustn't bring all my friends who think that theatre is long and rambly and kind of impressive and yet kind of pointless, they must stay away from this one because it will confirm all their prejudices.
Oh, dear. Well, that is The Caretaker. It's on at the Old Vic until the 14th of May. Well, let's step out of central London now and over to the Shoreditch Town Hall for a play by a young theatre company called The Wardrobe Ensemble. They've put together a play called 1972, The Future of Sex, which won rave reviews as well as awards at last year's Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Dominic, tell us about the group and their latest production.
It's the first time I've come across them, but on the basis of this, I'm going to try very hard not to miss them again. I mean, there are quite a few ensembles or companies out there who take a bunch of sort of people in their 20s, maybe not long out of drama school. They all get together, they find a theme, they decide to improvise, they decide to devise a play around it, they decide to sort of shun conventional form, they decide to play with form, they decide to experiment, to do music and dance and move it all in. And often you sort of go, yeah, I wish they'd sort of they'd left one of them to devise it at their typewriter instead. This is sort of the zenith of that approach. It's absolutely fabulous. It's only an hour long. It gets so much in and into its setting about sexual awakening in 1972. And although it has lots of period trappings, period fashions, period music, period wallpaper, all of that, the story of young confusion and fear about sex is also sort of timeless as well.
Quite interesting. We were just talking about 3 hours and now we've got something that's only 1 hour.
Mm.
Did you almost feel it was too short?
No. I mean, partly because they're incredibly uncomfortable, the seats. so actually an hour was plenty. Yeah. I mean, maybe the best version of this play could be even longer. There are a few moments. I mean, it's quite hard to pack in and explain what it is they do because there's so much in it. But there are moments when they leap ahead, for example, from 1972, cut to a couple of characters in 1990 meeting up again at a concert. Or they cut to the child of one of the characters getting into problems with internet porn 30 years later. It does that sort of thing. And there are a few moments like that you thought, yeah, that's a really nice scene. I think they should probably just tweak it a bit. But on the whole, this was one of those ones where I sat just feeling really excited, like, oh, yeah, this is... I mean, it's not the future of theatre, but it's a future of theatre, because, as you say, the pace of it is so good. There's so much information, so much tenderness and humour as well, but it doesn't feel like it's been condensed too much.
Small things in... Well, great things in small packages, rather. But what exactly is being said here? I mean, obviously there's so much that can be said when we're talking about modern attitudes towards sex, maybe shone through the lens of something retro. But what are some of the main themes that you came away with pondering in your own brain as you walked out?
Oh, crikey, yeah, lots. There's a very heavy irony at the beginning with someone announcing this as the age of free love, of sexual revolution, and if you meet someone in the street, just go off with them, it's no problems. And, you know, surprise, surprise, the truth isn't quite like that. And we might like to think if we were back there, it'd all be freer. But in fact, there was so much more ignorance and fear. There's ignorance and fear still now, like I say, as the flash forward to the internet porn thing reminds us. I think it just reminds us that you know, our sexual attitudes are built on our early experiences and how fragile and tender those are. What it's not doing is looking back and pointing at 1972 and either saying, look how naive they were, or saying, look how free they were. It's a lot more interesting than that. But it's also just about the sensation of being there. It's got a wonderfully sort of psychedelic feel about it, with the music, with the dancing, with people get behind microphones to voice each other's thoughts. So it's an absolute sort of Nutribullet of theatre.
1972, The Future of Sex is on at Shoreditch Town Hall until the 23rd of April. It will then tour the UK throughout May. Head to thewardrobeensemble.com for details. And we'll finish today with a show at London's Royal Court for a new show by Alistair McDowell called X. The play is set on board a marooned space station where four occupants, two scientists and two astronauts, have lost contact with Earth. Strange things begin to happen in the space station. A blood-red X appears on the window, and the digital clock goes berserk, suggesting that time itself is dissolving. Dominic, what's actually going on at the centre of this?
That's about the size of it, really. I like you just referred referred to it earlier as a space station drama, as if that was a sort of a genre. We all, you know, what's one of the six genres? A space station.
Well, we do things differently here in London.
Well, it is a space station drama. It's probably by the end more similar to Pinter or something more experimental than it first appears.
Pinter in space.
Yeah, I'd go and see that. And it starts out okay. It's a play of two halves. It's a bit The Martian when it begins. They're on Pluto. They've been abandoned, or they think they have been abandoned. They're sending their messages back to Earth, but they don't get anything back. What's going to happen to them? Tempers are fraying. All of that. And for the first hour, it's great. It's slightly spooky. There's a sort of strange start. Space Child appears, and there's sort of hallucinations, and it's all of that. So it's realism, but with a spooky edge and a kind of playful edge. And Jessica Raine is terrific as the botanist, I think it is. Or is that The Martian? I forget. Anyway, she's something like that. When the chief dies, she becomes the captain. Then what happens in the second half, I actually read this play before going to see it, and then I thought maybe I'd read it too fast because I must have missed something. So, but no, I've seen it now, and I didn't miss something, or I did miss something. Then in the second half, he takes all the themes that had been neatly woven into this sort of space station drama, and it's as if rather than typing words on his keyboard, he sort of presses the button marked art repeatedly. And it gets, for me, too experimental. And you sort of think, am I missing? Am I thick? No, it shouldn't be quite this mysterious. What on earth is going on?
It almost sounds as though it's taken quite a few of its cues from the wonderful Russian science fiction Solaris from the 1970s. I am interested to know, though, how it looks on the stage because, I mean, for some reason, when we think about plays, anything performed on a stage, it almost feels as though it doesn't really venture into anything futuristic. We tend to stick to sort of quite classical themes and classical sorts of settings, don't we? It's unusual to have something set in space.
Yeah, and they do it very well. They have a sort of duck egg coloured space station, and it suggests something very futuristic, despite not having anything more than, I think, the laptop in the first half. Less than that, it has some mirrors on the wall. It really works well. It's at a slight wonk, so it looks like it might be a space station or something just tumbling. No, it's a wonderful piece of design. It's terrific, and I like to say it's beautifully performed. You know, what is performed is great. But I think there's a telltale scene, and how you react to this scene is probably the key to whether you're going to go with this, and there's a lot to like here, or whether you're going to go, I'm a bit frustrated. There's a scene when, as language dissolves, as time dissolves, the two characters on stage lose language and they start going X, 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 X repeatedly. And I think if you're thinking, wow, yeah, this just proves that everything is temporary, that even language can desert us and is malleable and is arbitrary. Or if you're thinking, as I was a bit, oh, this is just the writer trying to make a statement, but without actually bothering to give us plot or characters in which to do so.
Oh, dear. Quite the indictment. Let's talk about the writer then, Alistair McDowell. Often when you watch a play, you can sometimes feel or perhaps pick up a sense of the age of the writer themselves. He's just 28 years old. Very young in writer's years, isn't it?
And I've seen a couple of his. Pomona is probably his most successful to date. That went to the National. He also wrote one called Brilliant Adventures, which I saw, which is on in Manchester. And both of them combined, we'll call realism with science fiction. And I like that blend. I mean, I think science fiction is underrated. I heard him on Start the Week, and he was sort of slightly saying, oh, well, it is science fiction, but it doesn't really matter that it's in Pluto. It could be anywhere. And actually, I think maybe that's part of the problem. I think he's committed to us to a genre piece in the first half. And then in the second half, it is as if he's saying, yeah, but these are just ideas and themes we're exploring. I think, well, no, let's carry on with the Pluto stuff. Let's follow it to its genre end and do it properly. Of course, give it a twist. Make it make it pretty art house. Great, great. But come good on the promise you've made to tell a story, I think.
We're in space. Let's ride it out. That is X, which is on at the Royal Court until the 7th of May. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks to my guest, Dominic Maxwell. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. The show was produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for our weekly books chat. But for now, from me, thanks for listening. Goodbye.